Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Erevin Daf Yud Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur in the middle of Daf Yud Ches. You will notice a bow tie shape. This indicates a series, which is explained on the side of our Gemara under the Mivne heading. In fact, we made an allusion to this at the very end of our previous shiur, but in order to get into the Gemara again, we refer to the Mivne, and we indicate that this series lasts till Daf Yutes Omed Aleph, and we've noted Sidro Shel Meimro Shel Reb Yirmiyo Ben Elozer. It's a very long series of comments made by Reb Yirmiyo Ben Elozer. Immediately following the first bow tie, you'll notice a triangle. This is a Sidro Shel Shimush Bamila Dyo, or Dyu. The use of the word Dyu, meaning two, like duo, three. We'll see several occasions where this is addressed. So now we begin the Gemara, but we are beginning with the reading of the first bow tie, which we in fact read last time, but in order to start from the beginning of the series, we'll read this again. My Diumdin. You'll notice we have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, indicating Yud Zayin Amud Beis. If you go back to Yud Zayin Amud Beis, you'll notice an arrow at the very beginning of the Mishnah, which began the second Perek. The first line of the Mishnah, there was a reference to Arba Diumdin. There was a reference to the four double boards, four right-angle corners surrounding a bor, a be'er. So the Gemara asks, what is the significance of that word? What is the meaning of it? Omrav Yirmiya ben Elozer, Dyu Amudim, two. Dyu is two, like we said before, duo, Amudim, two boards. Each corner was formed by the right angle comprised of two boards. The what you see on this next line is a simen of Memros. It's a called a type of memory device that could be used to remember or account for the statements made by Rav Yirmiya ben Elozer in the upcoming Dapin. So you see, Diu leminuda shevach zunis niskalkel b'mido shlosha simon. These will take on meaning as we go on in the Gemara. Tanan Hossam, a Tanaic source in the context of something called Demai. We discussed Demai in our previous year. Demai, once again, is a reference to fruit or produce purchased from ignoramuses, that they're on a rabbinic level. There is a question as to whether they tithed or not, and rabbinically we require them to tithe. And the basic problem with the Amoratzim is that there is a fear that a minority of them don't tithe certain tithes, because they we'll call it a fear. Without getting into details, there's a lot more detail than what we're saying now, but they don't want to feel the loss in tithing. They giving removing 10% of their fruit for this or that is in their eyes a loss. So there's a source that says Rabbi Omer Kol Hashisin Pturin, all Shisin are examples of poor quality figs. Poor quality figs have little value. So if you buy from an Amoretz, or you acquire from him Shisin Pturin, they're exempt from the requirement to tithe the Demai tithe, because they probably would have done it. They are not concerned about the loss, because it's really worth very little in the first place. So they'll take care of the tithes of the Shisin. Chutz mina Dupra, with the exception of the Dupra, which is of significance. It's a fig that has significance, and therefore they are suspect on a rabbinic level of not having tithed for there is value to those. My dupro, what is the meaning of that? Omar ulo, ilon ho'isa du peros bishana. It's a fig tree that produces two fig crops in the course of a year. So you see again the word du referring to two. Omar of Yirmiyah ben Elazar. Du parzuf ponim hoya lo la'odom arishon. At this point in the Gemara, we have a topic heading. We're not going to be providing topic headings for each one of the Maimros of Rabbi Yirmiyah ben Elazar. Our feeling is that it's pretty easy to spot what the topic is simply by looking at the bow tie and what that which follows immediately. In this case, however, the Gemara is going to be having a long discussion around this topic. So on the side, we've noted the nosei, the topic heading, Brias Adam. We're going to deal with the creation of man. Du Partsuf Ozonov. When original man was created, was he created in a back-to-back male-female entity? That's du means two parts of two, forms, two, sometimes the word parts of means faces, one, in this case, back-to-back, stuck together in the original creation. Ozonov, or was a male creature, namely Adam created with a zonov, with a tail, and that tail subsequently was fashioned into Chava the female. So our Gemara begins, Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah ben Elazar, Du partsuf ponim hoyo loy l'Adam Arishon. Adam Arishon had two faces in his original creation, back-to-back, back-to-back entity stuck together. Shinema, the Pasuk says, Ochor vokedem tzartani. Rashi says, Ochor vokedem tzartani, milifnimi me'ochor, from in front and back, tzarto li tsuras ponim, you formed the image of a face. The Ritva explains the word sartani from a lotion of tsoros. Tsoros is a term referring to a person with two wives, and they're called co-wives. So here the word tsoros, in this case, we mean two, in this case, two people. Adam and Chava created in the initial creation, back to back, stuck together. Ksiv, there's a pasuk that says Vayiven Hashem Elokim es Hatzela. This pasuk is, as you can see in Brachos Perek Beis, pasuk Chaf Beis, and we call that the section of the Torah dealing with the story of creation. Rav Ushmuel, there's a machlokis regarding the pasuk itself. According to both versions that we will see, the word Tzela has to do with the from the side. Chalomar Partsuf. The side of the person, in this case being back to back, and Vachanomar Zonov, from his back side. So at this point in the Gemara, we just saw a Machlokes Rav and Shmuel. What does Vayiven Hashem Satsela mean? And the Almighty built up the side. So we saw one is the Partsuf approach, the back to back, full creature, two faces, two bodies, back to back in one unit, and the other approach was he built up a tail that was taken from Adam. As we go on in the Gemara, we're going to notice the use of a triangle on the side under the Mivneh. We've noted that these triangles that appear in two directions are a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of hashnei hashitois le'or hapsukim. We will see psukim that the Gemara says Hainu Dichtiv. You'll see that this expression Hainu Dichtiv appears again and again with it, and it's dot underlined so that you can see it readily. In other words, we'll be looking at the two shitas we just saw and analyzing other psukim with these two approaches in mind. So now we continue. Bishlamo lemandom ar partsuf. Things would make more sense according to the partsuf approach. Hainu dichtiv ochor vokedem tzartani. That it was formed ochor in back and kedem in front, back to back in entity. Elo lemandom ar zonov my ochor vokedem tzartani. But according to the tail approach that a singular male, namely Adam, was created. Adam was created with a tail. What significance has the pasuk ochor vokedem, which is mashma two images, but according to the tail approach, there was only one full image created plus a tail. So what does ochor vokedem sartani indicate? The more answers kid Rav Ami, based on his teaching, the Amar Rav Ami. Ochor lemaisa breishis vekedem lepuronos. The word ochor vokedem, according to Rav Ami, is not a reference to the creation of two entities, but rather it's a time consideration. Ochar meaning at the end of Maisa Bracious, at the end of the days of creation. And Kedem means at the beginning of punishment. Now, we have a bracketed section within which the Gemara will deal with what do these refer to, Ochar, Lemaisa Bracious, and Kedem, Leponus. After the brackets, if you skip the brackets momentarily, you'll see that we pick up the analysis of the Bishlamo analysis, according to whom do the other psukim work out for. Now that you can see the overall structure, let's learn the bracketed section. This teaching of Rav Ami that says Ochor Lemaisa Bracious and Kedem Lepuronos, Bishlamo Ochor Lemaisa Bracious, I understand what that means, the end of creation. The Lu'ivri Ad Mali Shabbato. Man was not created until Mali Shabbato means Friday, Erev Shabbos. When you look at the beginning of Sefer Bracious, you'll see that all the other creatures and entities of the world were created before man. So he was the end of the Maisa creation, the story of creation. Elo v'kidam l'pronos mayhi. What do you mean that he was the beginning of punishment? And there are two stages till we figure this out, and that's what we highlighted with the double underlines. So, I lemo mishum klola, if when you say he was the first at the point of punishment, so if the reference is to the original curses, so Mar says habet chila niskalo nochash l'vasof niskalo chal v'sof niskalo adam. In terms of the order of the curses surrounding the incident of eating from the forbidden fruit, so the first one to receive the curse was the nochash, the serpent. Following the Nochash was Chava, and finally at the end was Adam. So what do you mean when with regard to Adam you say he was Kedem Lepuronos, the first of punishment? Not, it certainly can't refer to the curses just referred to. Elo Lamabel, but when it comes to the great flood in the time of Noach, we find that man was the first to be punished by the flood. The pasuk says, "Vayimach es kol ha'yikum asher al pnei adamo me adam v'ad behema." And the entire yikum, the world, was eradicated, was erased through the flood from man. Man is mentioned first till animal. So it's in that context that Rav Ami said that he was a kodem lepuranus. Bishlamo lemadomar partsuf, and we, as you can see, we're continuing back analyzing the two approaches of partsuf versus zonov. The partsuf, the face-to-face approach or back-to-back approach, makes more sense. Hainu dichtiv vayitzer tre yudin. In the story of the creation of man, the word vayitzer appears. That word has to do with formation, and it is spelled with two yuds, tre yudin, meaning two forms. That like vayotzar would mean he formed one form. The extra yud would indicate a second form. Well, the idea of two forms works out according to the partsuf approach. Elo lamadam or zonav my vayitzer. But according to the tail approach, there was only one entity created, one man, one human being with a tail. But that doesn't justify the second yud. The Gemara answers that approach, the zonav approach, takes a different twist to the pasuk of Vayitzer. Kidur Rav Shimon ben Pazi, in accordance with Rav Shimon's approach, the Omer Rav Shimon ben Pazi, Oy li miyitzri, Oy li miyotzri. The word, the double yud, is yotzri and yitzri. Yitzri is a reference to the evil inclination of a person. Yotzri is a reference to the Almighty. And throughout life, man lives with a constant struggle. If he chooses the path of life, so to speak, the path of the Almighty, well, that certainly involves the overcoming of the temptations of the evil inclination. So there's oily is an expression of woe, woe unto me from the temptations that I have to constantly fight off in my choice to follow Yotzri, the path of the Creator. And likewise, if a person chooses to follow his evil inclination, so woe unto him for the punishment that he will eventually have to pay from the Almighty. So woe unto a person, either way, a constant, we'll call it a lifelong struggle. That is true. That is, we'll say, the purpose of living in this world, to overcome, to choose the right path. Of course, a constant struggle. Bishlamo lamando mer partsuf, hainu dichtiv, zocher unikeva boram, according to the partsuf approach. So this pasuk works out well in light of this pasuk that says that in the initial creation, male and female were created. Okay, so the pasuk indicates that from the beginning there was male and female. That works out according to the partsuf approach that two entities were created back to back, male and female. Well, Amadom Razon of Maizokh and Ikeva Boram, but according to the tail approach, where do you see the two genders at the initial point of creation? The Zonov approach says that a male, a man, Odom, was created, and only later the female, Chava. So the Gemara explains, Lichad Rebbe Avo, the Zohar Unikeva Boram Pasuk will make sense or be understood as we continue with Rabbi Avo's teaching. The Rabbi Avo, Rami, Rabbi Avo poses two psukim, one against the other. Ksiv, Zohar Unikeva Boram, one pasuk indicates that both genders were created initially. Uksiv, Betzelem Elokim Bora Oisoi. In this pasuk, you see, which says in the image of the Almighty, he, in the singular, Oso is singular, and was created. So here we have what would appear to be a contradiction in the psukim. One pasuk indicating two, and the other pasuk indicating one. The resolution that Rabbi Avo teaches, Betchila also machshava levrosh shnayim. Originally, the original idea had been to create two, the Zohar Nekeva, Ulubasof, but when it came to the actual creation, the actual act of creation, Ulubasof lo nivra elo echod, only one was created, the singular man with a tail. Bishlamo lamandomer partsuf, with the partsuf approach, then it makes more sense, hainu dichtiv, vayizgor boser tachteno. The pasuk says that after Chava was brought to be, so the flesh was closed, and which means that they both had been created back to back, and they were split, and we'll call it a type of divine surgery. So the flesh from the back at the point that they were separated had to be sewn or closed up. But according to the tail approach, what's the need for closing up the flesh? Several versions of names you can see. The pasuk that says, and the flesh was closed up, it's a reference to the small slit that resulted when the tail was severed. So there is a need for regarding that mokom chatach, the small cut that was made. Now the triangle, you can see, becomes inverted, because at this point things will look better for the tail approach. We saw this posuk cited a few lines above. Vayiven eshatzela. Vayiven means, and it was built up. So according to the tail approach, it's mashma, it indicates something that was not formed and needed to be built up. But according to the approach that there were two complete human beings that were created initially, what's the need for building something up? The Gemara answers, well, the word vayiven has an alternative meaning. The Reb Shimon ben Menasya, in accordance with Reb Shimon's teaching, the Dorash Reb Shimon ben Menasya, Vayiven Hashem Elokim Esatzela. And we have a one over here because there will be two versions of this teaching. So it says in the pasuk that Hashem built up the tzela. Mlamet shekila kodesh baruch hu lechava. Kila means he braided her hair. This teaches us that the Almighty braided her hair. Vehevia le'odom harishon. And then brought her to Odom in their first meeting. Or in other words, after they had been created back to back, he then split them, so they were separated at that point. Up till that point, it's safe to assume that Odom had not seen her. So he, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, after he split them, they were separated. At that point, he then braided her hair and brought her to Adam. She came to Kochay Ayom, Kurin Lekal Isa Bini Yasa. Kochay Ayom is a reference to foreign locations, overseas. Foreigners, refer to what we in Hebrew would call Kli'ah. They use what is associated with the original Torah word. They call it Biniyasa. You see in the word Biniyasa, the word Vayiven, or the root of the word Vayiven, appears in Biniyasa as well. So, you might say, ironically, the other peoples of the world, there were other peoples that preserved the Torah use of the word Vayiven in the context of hair braiding. Dover Acher, Vayiven Hashem Elokim. Another approach to understanding Vayiven, which will be good for the Partsuf approach. Omar Rav Chista, V'amri lo b'masdis tana. Another version is, it's taught in a Tanaic source, that Vayiven teaches me melamed shebona kodesh baruch hu lechava kebinyan, that when he formed the female side, she was formed like a structure, like a building, like kebinyan otzar, like the structure of a storehouse, of a warehouse of grain. And what does that mean? Ma oitzer, we're at the top of Omid Beis. Ma oitzer ze rochav mi lamato of the kotzer mi lamalo kedei lekabel es haperos. For most effective storage, a storehouse is wider at the bottom and narrower at the top in order to hold the fruits. Af ho'isha, so to the woman, Ruchava Milamato, Ruktsoro Milamala, her physiology is such that she is wider at the bottom, midsection we'll say, and narrower at the top, Kide Lakabil Esavlad, in order to receive the growing child that is developing within her. Vayivyel El Ha'odam, Malame, this pasuk teaches us, Shasa Kodesh Baruch Hu Shushbinus Adam Arishon. Vayivyel means, and the Almighty brought her to man. In other words, we can just envision the first wedding of man and woman. The Almighty accompanied her, so to speak, to bringing her to her husband, to Adam. Mikan, we see from here, we should explain the word Shushbinus has to do with the one who accompanies the new couple in their marriage. The lesson to be learned from here, Mikan, from here we learn, Legodol Shiasu Shushbinus Lekoton, that a person of greater distinction should offer his services as a shushbin, as maybe we call him in English, the best man, the one who accompanies the groom, and likewise the one who accompanies the bride, should offer his services in that capacity, even if he is of greater distinction than those that are getting married. That's shiasa shushbinus lekotan v'al yeralo. It shouldn't look like something of a denigrating of indignation, and the reason for that is, or we learn that from the ultimate source, the Almighty, whose greatness is unlimited, served as a shushbin for mere mortal man. The Gemara asks, Ulamadom a partsuf, according to the approach that says that there was a male and female created back to back, Heiminayu Sagi Beresha, which one was took the forward position, when Sagi means to walk, who walked forward, in other words, who was facing forward. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok Mistabra de Zohar Sagi Beresha. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok suggests that it's most likely that it's the male that was in the forward position, that would walk, was facing forward as they were walking. Desanya, the Tanaic source, tells us, Lo Yalech Odom Achorei Isha Baderech Vafilu Hi Ishto. A male should not walk in back of a woman, so that the man is supposed to be in front. A man should not walk in back of a woman on the road, even if the woman in front of him is his own wife. Nizdamno al hagesher, if, let us say, a man is on a bridge and he finds himself walking behind a woman, yisalkeno litzdodim, he should put her off to his side, meaning he should end up walking in front. He should hasten his pace and go in front of her. V'chol ha'oiver achorei isha b'nohor, anyone who trails behind a woman in the river, and in the river, if a person is crossing the river, so the tendency naturally is to raise one's clothing. So if a man finds himself walking behind a woman and continues walking behind her as they are crossing a river, ein lo chelek lo lamabo, he loses his portion in the world to come. It's a very, very fierce statement. Rashi adds, though, one point that is of significance. Banohar, Rashi says, on the upper part of the narrow lines, the medalia lamona, she raises her clothing, umistakil bivsara, and he thereby gazes upon her flesh. And Rashi adds, ube eshes ish koma, we're talking about a man walking behind a married woman. This Gemara, as many other Gemaras like this, can be taken to be taken in the context of staying away from sin. And to say that a person will lose his portion in the world to come, it must be that we're dealing with a very serious type of offense. And as Rashi adds, in fact that is the case, if you imagine that the woman in question is a married woman, she's married to someone else, so that a person is warned not to walk behind her, because that will simply inflame his desire, and one can never know where that will lead. And in the case of an Eishes Ish, it could lead to something of a catastrophic nature. As you can see, we have a bracketed section. On the side of the Gemara, we have a note, and we've written Hesber HaSograyim, the explanation of these brackets, Lamrot Shetochen HaBraisa Hu Binyonei Tznius, even though the content of the upcoming source has to do with the issue of modesty, Divrei Rav Nachman Achrichein Mehavim Hemshich Yoshir MeHaBraisa DeLifnechein. Rav Nachman afterwards is actually a continuation of thought that was in the Braisa we just learned. So that if you were to skip the bracketed section momentarily, we would read, Amar Rav Nachman, Monoach Am Ha'oretz Hoya. Monoach, he was the father of Shimshon HaGibor, who was one of the Shoftim, one of the judges of Israel in Sefer Shoftim, known for his divine strength. So his father, his name was Monoach. And Rav Nachman says, Monoach Am Oretz Hoya. His father was an ignoramus. Shinemar, the Pasuk says, Vayokum Vayelech Monoach Acharei Ishto. And we dashed underline Acharei Ishto. And we look at Rashi Am Oretz Hoya, Delogomar Derech Eretz Demas Nisan. He didn't learn the proper behavior as was featured in the Tanaic source we had just learned. Dikotoni Li'el, we saw before, and Rashi mentions Li'el like we are using our arrows, the Braisa before. It said, Lo Yahalech Odom Afilu Achori Ishto, that a person should not walk behind a woman, even if it's his own wife. So Rav Nachman, as you can see, is coming on the heels of the Tanaic source before that said one should not walk behind even one's own wife. And here Monoach was not listening, wasn't abiding by the teaching in that Tanaic source, leading Rav Nachman to conclude that Monoach was an Amor, someone who was not learned. That having been said, let's go back over the bracketed section. Tanu Rabbanan, Hamratze Mois Leisha Miyodoi Liyodo Oy Miyodo Liyodo. Maratze Mois has to do with counting change, or like transferring money, cash, coins from hand to hand. So a man who is counting or giving change, let's say to a from his hand to her hand, or from her hand, he's receiving money, she's counting out money into his hand, and he's doing it, b'shvil shi'istakil bo, he's not really so interested in the money, or he has other options to go to someone else, but he's going to a specific woman in order to gaze upon her. Well, if that's how a person behaves, afilu doima l'Moshe Rabbeinu, even if he has the merits like Moshe Rabbeinu, shekibel Torah mehar Sinai, that received the Torah from Mount Sinai, lo yinaka midina shel Gehenem, such a man, even if he has a lot of merits, he won't be spared, he won't be cleansed or escape the judgment of purgatory. The Olova Kosov Omer, regarding someone like that, the Pasuk says, Yad liyad lo yinake ra, which means lo yinake midino shel Gehenem. He will not be cleansed from ra, which is a reference to the judgment received in purgatory. The term Yad Liyad, Rashi explains, is a reference or a hint to Moshe Rabbeinu, who received the Torah from Miyad HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mimino Eish Da Slomo, the Pasuk says that the Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah, so to speak, of course all figurative, from the hand of the Almighty. So Yad Liyad in this Pasuk means someone who is like Yad Liyad, meaning from hand to hand, having a double meaning, that he is like Moshe Rabbeinu that received Torah from the Almighty, and the double meaning, he counts the cash from hand of the woman to his own hand. Lo yinakira, he won't be spared from the judgment of Gehenna. Omar Rav Nachman, Monoach Amor Atzoya, Monoach, the father of Shimshon Hagibor, was an ignoramus. He was he was not learned. Shinemar, the Pasuk describing Monoach says, Vayokam Vayelech Monoach Acharei Ishto, and Monoach arose and walked following his wife. At this point, you'll notice a challenge. We have a Dalet, which we call a Dechiyah, a rejection, and you can see the rejection long marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, where Rav Nachman is brought into question. Maskif lo Rav Nachman Yitzchok, Rav Nachman Yitzchok asks on Rav Nachman, Elameata, well, according to your approach, in other words, you took the pasuk of Vayokam Vayelech Monoach Achari Ishto, and you said Achari Ishto means physically walked following his wife. Elameata Gabi Elkona, and the double underline highlights Elkona and Elisha on the next line. These are two prophets concerning whom you see the pasuk make reference to their following a woman. Regarding Elkanah, Dichtiv, it says, Vayelech Elkanah Achrei Ishto. Elkanah was a prophet. He walked Achrei Ishto. Achi Nami. Are you going to say the same thing? You're going to say he's also an Amoretz? Taking the Pasuk to mean that he physically followed his wife while walking. The Gabi Elisha, Dichtiv, Vayokav Vayelech Achareha. It says regarding Elisha that he followed the woman. Achi Nami. Is that to mean, take the Pasuk to mean like you understood by Manoach that he physically walked following the lady, and thereby classifying them, Elkanah and Elisha, as amaratzim, as ignoramuses? That can't be. A prophet is a person of great, great learning. He couldn't possibly be an amaretz. Elo acharei devorei viatzosa, the acharei ishto that's featured in the psukim, indicates following their counsel, not a physical walking, but rather a mental following of their counsel. Hachanami, so too by Manoach, acharei dvorav atzosa. Manoach followed his wife, not that he walked tailing her, but rather he followed her advice and counsel. And as far as that is concerned, there's no problem in following the advice and counsel of one's wife. So Rav Nachman Yitzchok, that is, he repudiates Rav Nachman's classification of Manoach. Here, a long point appears by Rav Ashi. That's the nun you see is a nekuda. Rav Ashi goes back to Rav Nachman. Omer Rav Ashi, lemaid omer Rav Nachman, Noach amor atoya. According to Rav Nachman's approach, that Manoach was an ignoramus, and previously we had said he was an ignoramus insofar as he had not learned the Tanaic source that we saw. He was unfamiliar with the Tanaic source. So, when we say Tanaic source, we don't mean literally historically speaking, the Tanaic source is taught by Tanoim, but it means the information contained in the Tanaic source, which oftentimes was something of a very ancient nature. So, according to following Rav Nachman's approach that Rav Nachman was an Am Haaretz because he didn't know this, we'll call this oral tradition, Afilu Bei Rav Nami Lo Kora, he didn't even learn verses, Mikra. Mikra is understood to be something that one would learn before the oral tradition. Psukim, basic psukim, he had not learned, something that children learn. Let's read that again. Afilu Bei Rav Nami Lo Kora. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Vatokom Rivka Vinarosel, Vatirkavno Al Hagmalim, Vatelachno Acharei Hoish. In the story where Rivka was brought by Eliezer to Eliezer, the servant of Avram, to meet Yitzchak, it says that Rivka and her bondmaids rode on camels following the man. And the emphasis in our markings, you can see we dashed on the acharei ha'ish, below lifnei ha'ish, and not in front of the man, putting the man behind her. So from the story involving Rivka, one sees from a pasuk standpoint that a man should not trail a woman, but rather the other way, the woman behind the man. And once we've gotten onto the topic of following one, following the other, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, acharei ari velo acharei isha, better to trail a lion with all the danger that that entails than following a woman. And the woman, again, we're referring to an eishes ish, a married woman. Acharei isha velo acharei avodes kechavim, better to be behind a woman than following Avos Chavim is idolatry. Rashi adds a little bit to this, and he says, "V'lo achrei avodes kochavim, shemo yimoshech achareha." Avodes kochavim is idolatry, and one should not trail behind or follow something of an idolatrous nature, because that might lead a person to continue in its worship. Uksiv harchek me'oleh darkecho v'aminon zu ha'apikursus. Rashi quotes a pasuk that says, distance yourself from it, and that's a reference to apikursus. Apikursus is actually something that might very well be something other than simple idolatry. What apikursus exactly is the subject of discussion in Maseches Sanhedrin in the last perek, but it certainly has to do with the general realm of those who we'll say depart adherence to our Torah tradition. So this Gemara is telling me that basically to illustrate how dangerous, how bad, how influential in the negative sense it could be, being in the context of those who are Torah scoffers, idolatry, we'll call as apikursis, one should take great pains to avoid being in their context. And we continue, achorei avodes kechavim velo achorei beis haknesis bishah she'atzibur mispalin. If you had to make a choice between these two, better to be in back of the idol or apikursis than in back of a shul while people are davening and you don't enter. That creates an impression that you are a kofer. And a kofer is the worst level. That's someone who is a denier of the Almighty. So that one who is, let's say, was standing outside a synagogue while everyone is praying inside and he remains outside, and we can maybe say his back is turned to it, that is the worst in this series. There's a lot more on the topic of Achorei Beis HaKnesses that's featured in Maseches Brochas, and if I'm not mistaken, Maseches Shabbos as well, but this is not the time for elaborating on that. The Omer Reb Yirmiyahu ben Elazar, Kol Oysun Hashanim Shoya Odom HaRishon Benidui. All the years that Odom HaRishon was in a state of excommunication after the Almighty expressed his dissatisfaction or his rage with his having sinned in the Garden of Eden, so he was in a state of nidui. Nidui is a form of cherem or excommunication. During those years, hoilid ruchin v'shidin v'lilin, he gave birth or he bore all kinds of spiritual demonic forces. Shenemar v'yodom shloishim umas shana v'yolid b'dmusa kitzamo. And it says that this pasuk says that Adam had reached the age of 130, and then he bore offspring in his own form, meaning human offspring. Michlal, this would infer the adhoid, up till this point, lav kitzamo oilid, that something not in his image is that which he bore. In other words, he birthed all kinds of spiritual demonic forces. Ruchin, Shidin, Valilin. The Gemara asks, Meisvei, Hoya Rabbi Meir Omer, Adam HaRishon, Chosid Godol Hoya, Adam HaRishon was a very pious person. Kevan Shirosh Nisa Misa Yodo, when he realized that the destiny of death awaited him. Niknasa literally means he was fined. Original man was not supposed to die, but after the sin, so death became the lot of man. So when he realized that, Yoshev Batainis Meav Shloshim Shana, he observed a fast for the period of 130 years, or Pirush Minu Isha Meav Shloshim Shana, and this we dashed on the line because this is what is the source of our problem. He distanced himself from his spouse, from his wife, for 130 years. And number three, Vehelo Zarze Teinim al Basor Meo Shloshim Shana, and he wore belts of figs or fig leaf belts for 130 years. The problem is, originally, it said that Adam birthed. He didn't bear children, but he bore Ruchin, Shidin, Valelin, which would indicate that in his relations with his wife, he was producing for 130 years all kinds of spiritual forces, demonic forces. In this source, though, it says he wasn't with his wife at all, so how can you say that he was bearing these other kinds of entities? The Gemara answers, he was not with his wife. Ki kwam rinon hahu, the statement before that he was birthing Ruchin, Shaden, and Lilin, these non-human entities, b'shichva zera dechoze le'onse, that's a result of the male semen that emitted from him, the male emission that happened beyond his control. Onse means something that it just happened. Nevertheless, that zera, that shichvas zera, produced these entities. The Omar Rav Yirmiyahu ben Elazar, miksa shvachu shalom oimrim b'fonav v'kulo shalom b'fonav. When one wants to praise a person, if he is in the presence of the subject of his praise, he should qualify or modify the amount of praise he says in his presence. However, if you are not in the subject's presence, you want to praise someone, you could say you want to praise him behind his back, when the subject is not around, then you can say it all, you can say everything that you have in mind. Where do we learn this idea? And by the way, Rashi says that the reason for not expressing all of one's praise in the presence of the subject is because it creates the impression that you are trying to flatter him. Flattery is referred to by the term chanufa, and chanufa is something that the Torah looks upon in a very unfavorable light. Now, where do we learn this principle from? Miksa shvacha b'fanav, when it comes to saying part of one's phrase, part of one's praise in their presence. Dichtiv, it says regarding Noach, it says, ki oischo ro'isi tzadik l'fanai b'dor hazeh. The Almighty says, you appeared to me as a pious, as a righteous individual. The term tzadik is used. Kulo shalo b'fanav, if you want to say all of one's praise, not in their presence, notice, Dichtiv, it says, Noach ish tzadik tomim hoya b'dor hazeh. So this pasuk is describing Noach not in his presence. It's describing him as a person who is tzadik tomim. Tomim, also a word of of complementary nature. So you see, tzaddik is mentioned, but even more, he was also tumim. He was wholesome. He was righteous and wholesome. So, and from this you see that when not in the subject's presence, you are entitled to say full praise. The Omer of Yirmiyahu ben Elazar, my dichti vine ale zayis torof b'fia. This pasuk is with regard to the Yonah, sometimes translated as the dove, that was sent out from the ark after the flood. And it pasuk describes the bird coming back to Noach with an ale zayis, the leaf of a zayis. Zayis is an olive tree, and it was torof b'fia. We're going to expound on this as we go on. Omro Yonah lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Yonah bird said to the Almighty, Ribbono Sholom, you mizonosai merurin kizayis umesurin biyodcha, better for my sustenance to be bitter, but given directly by you to me. In other words, my dependency is directly on you. V'alyu mesukin kidvash, and my mizonos, my food, should not be sweet as honey. Utluyin biyad boser v'dom, and be dependent on man. So you see here a very profound idea that one would ought to strive to have a direct contact without intermediaries and dependency on others, namely with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, the product is limited, rather than being dependent on man, on other people, on intermediaries, even though the result or the product might be greater. Now, where do we see in the pasuk the statement made by the Yonah bird? So the Gemara explains, "Ksiv hacha torof," that the pasuk said, "Vine aleizayis torof l'fiyo." "Ksiv hasam hatrifeni lechem chuki." And you see in that pasuk the word hatrifeni is associated with lechem, with bread. So that when you go back to the pasuk, the Yonah was saying that I want the Ale Zayas, which is the Tosis points out that the Zayas is a reference to the tree. The wood or the leaves of the Zayas of the olive tree are bitter. That should be my food. Because in the pasuk after Ale Zayas it Torof. Torof is associated with hachifeni lechem, with my food. And that's what Befiha, if I'm not mistaken, Rashi explains, Befiha is a reference to it's the bird's request. It was its prayer, its desire expressed to the Almighty. Our Gemara continues, the Omer of Yirmiyahu ben Elazar, kol bayis shenishmoin bo divrei Torah balayla, any house in which Torah learning, words of Torah heard at night, shuv eino nechrav, that's an insurance policy that it will not be destroyed, that it won't be nechrav. Shenemar velo omar ayel ka osi no saints miros belayla. That one who is no saints miros belayla, one who sings the praises of the Almighty, meaning he learns Torah at night, so he won't seek out where is my Creator, like someone who is in a state of destruction asking where is the Almighty. He won't have to seek him out because he won't be destroyed, because he is nosing zmiros by his learning Torah at night. And Rashi adds that balayla at night, what one says is heard, there's less external noise interference, so it's heard at greater distances. The Omer of Yirmiyahu ben Elazar, miyom shechor of Beis HaMikdash, dayo le'olam shishtamish b'shtei osyos, from the time that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And Rashi says that when the Beis HaMikdash was standing, so the Kohanim would bless the people through what we call Birkas Kohanim or Duchanin. They would bless the Almighty using in their bracha the ineffable name. It's a name that we don't, most people are unfamiliar. It could be that people that know the Kabbalah or the secrets of Torah might still know what this is, but for practical purposes, it's a tradition that's lost. That which the Kohanim used to pronounce by way of the name of Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash, and that name was comprised of many letters. So from the time that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, when greeting someone or blessing someone, it's enough that we use the short name of the Almighty, a two-letter name. That's what the Maimra here is saying. Dayo la'olam shishtamish b'shtei osios, using a two-letter name. Shenemar ko haneshama talel ko halleluyo. And that means that kol haneshama, any soul or any person that tahalel, that wants to say praise, he does it using the yud and hey name, and that is enough. The Omar Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Elazar, niskala lo bovel niskala shcheineha, niskala shomro nizbarchu shcheineha. When bovel niskala, when literally when it was cursed or when it was destroyed, so the neighbors of bovel suffered as well from the curse. However, Shomron is a reference to the northern region of Eretz Yisrael. When it was overrun, when it was destroyed, its neighbors, though, benefited. And the Gemara explains, Niskala Bovel, Niskala Shechina, when Bovel was cursed and destroyed, so its neighbors also suffered. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says regarding the destruction of Bovel, Vesamtiho Lemorash Kipoid V'Agme Mayim. And Bovel was placed as the inheritance of the Kipod. The Kipod is a destructive type of creature and marshes. And Rashi says that When you have a place that's inhabited by destructive creatures, their nature is also to wander to the surrounding areas. And we have a statement that is famous. It's Oy l'rosha, oy l'shcheino, woe unto the wicked, woe unto those that are his neighbors. So that when Bovel was destroyed and became the habitation of destructive creatures, the surrounding areas also had reason for concern. Continuing in the Gemara, Niskala Shomron Nisbarchu Shcheineha, when Shomron was destroyed, the northern kingdom of Israel was overrun, the neighboring nations actually benefited. Dechtiv, in describing the destruction of the northern kingdom, it says, V'samti Shomron, I shall place Shomron li'i hasodeh limitei limatoi korem. That Shomron is turned into heaps and into vineyards. Now, vineyards is something that those who are surrounding the area can come and benefit from. And Rashi points out at the top line, "V'enu sheino v'shevachu lo shenizkeres l'tova." This is a praise, even in these desolate moments. Nevertheless, it's remembered in a praiseworthy form, as we just pointed out, that it became a desolate area, desolate of people, and rather growing there were vineyards. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.